Wadamuli, I'm Kerry Lee Harding and this is NITV Radio. Bangarra Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Dance Company is celebrating 30 years since they first started. Making fire is the Wiradjuri word for Bangarra, so it is fitting the name of a new film telling the story of the dance company's history is Firestarter, the story of Bangarra, and it is currently screening at the Adelaide Film Festival 2020. I was joined by Stephen Page, Artistic Director, Bangarra, and first started off by asking Stephen, how did the idea for the film come about?
Yeah, look, the idea of the film was, because we were reaching out, we did 30 years of Bangarra surviving in this mainstream, let alone a black company, surviving out there for 30 years of our heritage, our 65,000-year heritage. And it was, they came in, I think around 2016, and it was just before David passed, and they wanted to do, they knew they were coming close to our 30 years, and they really just wanted to hang around and film and really just have it collated and put together to celebrate our 30 years. They didn't really have a structure or storyline as such, because Bangarra's archive was quite rich, you know, like we had all the stuff from analog to digital to photos. You know, there's been over 120 dancers that have come through, and so look, I just thought, wow, you know, like we've got to archive this, and we've got to do an internal archive, and this would be a great way to capture it. Yeah,
and I was impressed by how much archival footage and photographs were featured in the film, Stephen. You must have had mixed emotions going through all of that footage, eh?
Oh yeah, look, your life just flashes by, you know, I saw it about 2 months ago. I try to stay away from, you know, me, big controlling director, and, you know, I didn't want to, because Wayne Blair directed it with Mel Minchin, and at first they would come to me and then they would sort of talk about, really just about the spirit and the energy and the coming together from the college NASDA and graduates that wanted to start a professional company and early 90s. So it was going through this sort of chronological, just made me go back and have these strong memories, you know. And obviously my brothers who aren't with me today who are very instrumental, and just all the clan and all the people that came together wanting this to be something strong, you know. And I think that's what I sort of took away from it, was the goodwill and the good energy of mob coming together to, just to continue their stories through this sort of performing arts medium of dance, yeah.
And it was lovely, of course, to feature all the people in the documentary. There was Auntie Lillian Crombie in there, the lovely Frances Rings, Hetty Perkins is featured amongst others. How important is it to hear their side of the story in this film?
Look, I think, you know, from Hetty to Wesley to Fran to Lillian, I mean, we all came from the generation around the time of the early 90s. I mean, I joined as artistic director in 91. The company was registered in 1989. And so, you know, by the time I became director, like, people were really skeptical. I was a cocky, young, black, you know, 26-year-old, and had my two brothers, and they were like, come on, let's do this. Let's just run a company. And we've got mob, you know, families in Jakapur and families from Arnhem Land. And we've got, you know, we had Uncle Percy and strong mob from Torres Strait and Jensen Warrison. And we just had this mix, diverse of black fellas, you know, urban and rural. And we'd all just wanted the same thing, was just to keep this contemporary expression and caring for our heritage. So, so when I think of Fran and Wesley and Hetty, and, you know, Hetty Perkins was starting off in the, they were at the same time, the visual, contemporary visual art movement of the Mali was being birthed, you know, was surviving at least a good 4 to 5 years with Hetty and Fiona Foley and Jeffrey Samuels and Michael Riley and Tracy Moffat and, you know, just the list goes on. Roman Bancroft, there was a whole big movement in the visual art. And the 90s of Paul Keating, you know, there was that sense of, there was just this big want of storytelling through all these different mediums. So, you know, you could say, did we all come at the right time, you know, like, or were we were just all around and we were just hungry to continue our culture through this contemporary medium. And look, you know, when you get a strong, solid slab of concrete resource and you deliver your message through your black perspective or your black lens, you know, we work as a mob, we move as a mob, we move as a clan, we care for land and language and stories as a clan, you know, so we carry the value of that clan from the beginning. So I've just always kept in contact, or we've just always looked after each other, even if we don't socially see each other. Our black peers have always sort of, from that time, kept an eye on each other.
You mentioned Jack Kapora in there while you were speaking, from Yirrkala. Of course, he went to Sydney back in 1988. He was only 17 years old when you took him under your wing, I guess, as another brother in your family, eh?
Yeah. No, his family were really instrumental, the Manyayans from up at Darlin Boy in northeast Arnhem Land, and his mum and dad, not they're with us anymore, but they were... His mum was really instrumental as well. He would always ring her. And, you know, Jakapura was one of those rare artists that, you know, he could sing, he could dance, he could play the yadaki. You know, everyone think every black man can play the didgeridoo. Well, that's probably not true. But you're in line and you're in your community where you are connected to being the song man or being the didgeridoo player or just being the one that carries the energy and dances, you know. And he could do all three, you know, and he just really was like a native little fly there. He could jump really close to Dave and Nyan Russell, and you know, we lived together. And as I said, like you know, people always say, oh, you know, in the white system, they say, oh, you know, this sort of personal energy you can't carry into the profession. Well, I just don't agree with that. Like, I think we had to find, you know, we were personally trusted and bonded together, you know. We were his eyes in the city. You know, he used to say that. He said, you're my eyes in the city. And when we're in the bush and I'll take a ride up on full-on country up there, you know, he said, I'm your eyes, you know. And we always shared that. And, you know, like I come from a really, you know, a family of assimilation, and my mum and dad who couldn't feel empowered of who they were, you know. And when we connected with traditional mob in the north and we shared urban and traditional knowledge, and we accepted that and we wanted to work together to tell stories. You know, my father used to have tears in his eyes about this sort of relationship and coming together and just helping reconnect and cleanse that trauma of generations, of that assimilation generation. So, yeah, look, just the 16, 17, just hung close. And, you know, he worked, he left in 2001 and he did a solid, you know, 12 years working with us. And he was very instrumental in working with, as a song man with my brother David and what they composed together, how they worked together, you know, like, it was just really, really magical that, you know, we could all align up and, yeah, just be more than friends and brothers, but just wonderful collaborators, you know.
There must be so many magical memories that you have over the last 30 years, Stephen. What are some of the highlights for you? I know that's a big question.
Oh, yeah, look, you know, when I got to watch it and relive it, you just look at, just look, there's so many, you know, there's so many, and there's so many wonderful times with my brothers and traveling the world and caring for, being ambassadors around the world and taking our stories and beautiful memories of just creating with a blank canvas and not just knowing, only knowing a little bit of the seed of the story, and then just watching that flourish through rehearsals and sharing that with the artists, and we're all coming together to tell a story. Obviously, the Olympics, you know, working closely with Rhoda Roberts and Jakapura and Russell Page and David and Big Clan and you know, Mrs. Ward, who's passed on from Erna Bella there, or that Pitjantjatjara mob and the Women's Council in Alice Springs, and all those 500 mob that came from 4 to 5 communities in northeast Arnhem Land, and then the uprooting of 500 kids from Cairns that all came from the islands. That, you know, it was just all these mobs coming together, bringing their gift to Eora Nation country. I think the process of sharing and communicating all of that, and having, and then talking to all the radicals, and only Isabella Coe is not with us anymore, but, you know, them saying, oh, we've got a boycott, we can't go inside and do the ceremony. And I said, oh, let me choreograph the boycott and I'll choreograph inside the ceremony. I said, let's have an energy in both. Let's be inside and have a true spirit and build that energy for that girl, for that beautiful young girl who's running in that race, the young woman, you know, like she was going to light the cauldron. And so I think the process of the Olympics was probably the most exhausting and the most biggest sort of gathering we've done. So obviously that stands out. But look, just the sustaining of the company, you know, like we were 30 years last year. We're starting a new cycle and, you know, this old fellow's got to move on, you know. Like they were looking at us. I said, Dan, I don't want to be with that little walking stick coming in. And
well, stop it now.
Dan, I'm going, like, I'm really old, eh? But you know, just the artist, the next generation of dancers, and Frances Rings, who's an associate director, who's just so, you know, she gets me and she's seen what I went through and, you know, and I dropped the ball towards the end and trying to keep leading, and then my mum died, and, you know, family dying around you, and people say, oh, why is he obsessed in keeping on going? But I think for me, it was keeping the company going and keeping strong, because that's all I knew. You know, it'll be 30 years next year. That's all my energy, all my personal energy. When I have great kids, I'm a grandfather now, but, you know, they let me be and lead the foundation that is Bangarra today, you know. And I think a foundation to survive like that in this mainstream Western systematic world, trying to have your own voice, you know, it's not a pop-up easy job, you know. You take a lot of knocks, you take a lot of punches, people envy you, even your own black fellows, you know, they envy you because you have resource, they envy you because, you know, you're full-time, and You just put your head down and you just keep collecting and nurturing and telling stories, you know. And I think that's the proudest thing too. You want that legacy of this contemporary culture, of an old culture, continue. And it's tough out there, you know. Our mob are doing it tough, you know. And you know, this country is just, you know, I always feel like we've still got a long way to go. But I think I just keep saying that when you put that light on and your resilient skin, you know, you're constantly always charging forward to wanting to have your voice, and for mob and the family and clan to have their strong voice and to lead from us, you know. That's the main thing.
And speaking about family, I understand your family had a special preview, their own screening. What was some of the reaction from your family members about this film, Stephen?
Yeah, look, I actually rang them all on the Brisbane Festival just recently, last weekend, and the Film Festival in Brisbane. And obviously because of Queensland regulations, so they were all able to, which was good. Like, there were about 40 of them gathered, and my brothers and my sisters, and a lot of my Jim Belang, my elders from all my aunties, first cousins, my dad's sister and brother's kids, who are all the generation of elders now, they all came down from all Dad's country and all Mum's country, all that Noonuckle salt water. So Dad's fresh water, Mum's salt water, but 40 of them came together. But they were overwhelmed, and they, you know, they felt proud, they felt empowered, they felt healed, had to relieve, you know, the connections of my brother's passing. And all I was worried about was my sisters and brothers. So I rang them the day before and I said, look, you've seen this documentary. Hey, yeah, brother, we're really excited. I said, yeah, but just, you know, we're reliving the past, and, you know, we're going to have Russie and David there, and you've got to, you know, I just wanted them to be strong for each other. But but I had beautiful texts, and they rang me. They sat with them for a couple of days, you know, like they had to sit, and then they give me a call. But I think they were just, they were just proud of the strength of brothers together, and it just looked at all those values in families and those principles, and I think that recharged them again. Yeah.